Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, and we link to our guests' website so that you can get the information that you need, especially if it's something you heard and you want to check it out. We ask you to do that. If it resonates with you, run with it. If it doesn't, then don't run with it and find something that does. Over eight plus years of doing this program, I'm sure there's something that you can find that would be of interest to you. We'd love to hear from you as well. If you have comments, questions, suggestions, it's TMYS at richarddugan.com. That's Tell Me Your Story, TMYS at richarddugan.com. And we encourage you to drop us a line. We'd really love to hear from you. How many of you have thought, I really need to write this down? I have these ideas, these concepts. You have these words. You have these visions, these dreams, whatever they may be, that you want to get down onto paper and share with others, but you just haven't done it. And I am sharing now for the first time with my guest, Tom Bird, who is the author of Write From God. That's R-I-G-H-T from God. You, words, writing, and your divine purpose. I'll share with him right now that I have been working on a little book of my own since the fall of 2001. Now, how's that for procrastination, Tom?
You're an expert. You've got a PhD in it, Richard.
Welcome to the program. Thank you so much for joining us. Maybe in this program, after this program is over, I'll have the impetus to finish it. I have all the chapters done, but I've been told that I kind of need to beef them up a little bit with some additional examples, which I'm certainly willing to do, and there are plenty of them.
Well, I'd like to invite you to come to Sedona next March to participate in one of my retreats.
Oh, I would. I have. It's been so long since I've been to Sedona. As a matter of fact, been living in Santa Barbara for nearly 10 years, 9.5 years. Have only been back to Phoenix once to visit my parents. Phoenix being my hometown, and used to drive up to Sedona quite often. And you know, what a beautiful place to hold a seminar. What a place to tap into that the creative energies that we all have to do that. One of the aspects of your book has to do with one's purpose in life. And I have to, you know, really be straight with you, Tom. And I'm hearing things these days that are telling me that there are some imminent things coming our way. I mean, not great things. And we don't focus on those kinds of things on this program. But I will say that the energies that are out there that are talking about this, and this is from the spiritual metaphysical community. This isn't from the news media or political parties or the religious circles per se. But it's coming from folks who might even listen to this program or even participate. And I'm just sitting here going, well, if that's the case, what's the point of going on? And sort of wanting to write this down going, you know, what's the point of carrying on? Why are you writing your books? Why are you holding your workshops and seminars? Why are you healing people? What difference does it make if the end is imminent? And I often wonder about that with some of the writings that seem to come out of people who claim to be on their life's purpose. And I'm not here to challenge that because I'm not God. You know, I'm not the universal power, omnipotent, what have you. And I'm not here to make that judgment. It's just, I don't feel it. And some would say, well, you're being naive. And so I'm just wondering about life purposes and tapping into that. And this is just slight. This is before we go about the process of writing down that book that supposedly, and maybe we do, maybe we don't, have dwelling within us. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure, that'd be great. What would you like to know?
So if someone was to walk up to you in one of your seminars and say, Tom, I need to know what my life's purpose is, what do you tell them?
I can help lead you to it.
Okay.
You know, what happens, the reason, Richard, you've been struggling with your book so long, and I commend you for staying with it for the last 14 years, But the reason it's been a little bit more difficult for you than potentially others is because you have lived by the laws of the educational community that tells us that writing is an intellectual art form, which it is, but it's also a spiritual, emotional, and physical art form as well, too. So once we bring those four components together into one, the writing of a book becomes very easy. And again, I do invite you, sincerely invite you to come as my guest to my next retreat, which is the weekend of March. First weekend of March, I think, is the 3rd through the 6th of March in Sedona, Arizona, and to demonstrate for you how that's possible. Now, what happens, Richard, when you write a book through this divine method, which I have been privy to for the last 35 years, a lot more is released than just words on a page. You know, according to the New York Times, 81% of Americans feel they have a book stuck inside them trying to get out. And to be honest with you, I've been doing this for 32 years now. I've never taught anyone how to write a book. I teach them how they connect with a book that's already inside them. And so that book is on the other side of life. And when you birth that book, you birth a divine connection, a direct divine connection with the Almighty or whatever you want to see, he, she, or it as being. And when you birth that, you also birth your divine voice and your divine purpose. Because life is a lot more than just having a mortgage and two cars and a few dysfunctional children. It's all about delivering a message of hope, laughter, peace, sadness, compassion to the earth in your own way. And because the books give us a divine connection with the divine, direct divine connection with the divine, they lead us to our life's purpose. Does that make sense, Richard?
It absolutely does. As a matter of fact, it brings to mind something that was written in the series by James Redfield, The Celestine Prophecies, having to do with messages that we have, and that we have those messages for one another as well as ourselves. But what we tend to do is sort of, you know, we put up the shields. I use the science fiction analogy, Star Trek analogy of putting up the shields. And yes, you can fire your weapons, you can be aggressive and so forth, but transporters don't work and a lot of other stuff you can't do when those shields go up.
Right.
And you can't transmit
That's
your message.
Analogy.
Yeah.
Great analogy. And, you know, I really believe at the root level, the definition of an angel is a deliverer of a message. And I believe we're all angels in waiting. And when we connect divinely with our books, and I believe that's the real purpose of our books, is to help us to achieve a direct union with the Almighty. When we do that, we birth our messages, we become the angels we were meant to be. And then life becomes fulfilling, and life is fulfilled. And beyond jubilation lies peace. And I found that through my workshops and retreats, people not only write books, which is a great thing, but they find peace for the first time in their lives, a true inner peace, because they become one with their message, one with their purpose, and they're on the road, the spiritual path that they're meant to live in this life.
So
that's, I believe, what life is all about, is to embody that spiritual path and to manifest that spiritual path in a physical way, to give a different dimension to spirituality as a whole.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, it's quite possible that if I can bring this 14-year cycle to an end, it very well could assist in the process, my process, of dealing with all of these messages that I've been getting about whatever is coming. And nobody knows the future. Everybody's, I think, guessing. I mean, it's the great void, if you will, the future. We've never known what was coming. We never have, and we never will. We may get intuitive insight into what we need to do for self, but in terms of predicting, you know, Armageddon or the next president or the lottery numbers, sometimes I wonder, sometimes what comes across to me anyway is that our life's purpose is not to figure those things out, those very material things out. It's to figure out those more esoteric, more non-tangible or untangible things of our lives, as you say, you know, discovering ourselves and finding that peace.
Peace is a derivative of being on your path and living your mission and sharing your story. And that's what books give us the opportunity to do. If we harness all four aspects of ourselves at once to reach out and touch those books, writing a book is easy, it's possible, and a divine enlightenment happens as a result. I mean, I've been working with new authors now, Richard, as I mentioned, for 32 years. I've worked with over 80,000 of them. And I'm really happy when their books are completed. I'm very happy when the books become bestsellers. But my true soul happiness comes as a result of seeing the transformation these fledgling individuals go through to become the divine entities that they are through their writing. And, you know, the future is in question, and the present is the only thing that we have to do anything about the future. I believe the future that you're referring to is still yet to be written. And I believe what we do with our present time will determine how that future will go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was watching I've watched a number of documentaries about historical events, and invariably somewhere along the way, the narrator is talking about a significant event we're all familiar with, whatever it may be. And then the phrase is used, and this changed the course of history. Mm-hmm. And I sit there going, wait a minute, did you know what the course was going to be? And
Yes, good point. It's
like, how did we know this? You know, it's like whether it be you want to go back 2,000 years to the crucifixion, or you want to come forward to the Spanish Inquisition, and maybe if Catholicism had been a little less brutal, and so on and forth, and continue to come forward to different historical events. Gee, if that hadn't happened, then this wouldn't have happened, and well, we wouldn't even be where we are today, and so on and so forth. That's that old the old theory of pulling on the, changing certain parts of one's life, their past. Well, you can't do that.
Yes.
Because if you do that, then you unravel everything, and then you're not who you are now. You would be someone else because of the different series of events. And I know that there are a lot of people who have written books, as we're talking about writing. And I'm wondering, this thought just occurred to me, that have you ever come across someone who has this desire? You know, they know that they've got this inside of them and they needed to get it out. Or maybe they've already started something and they can't seem to finish it. And it's not about finishing that work, but that there's another one that has to be born first before they can finish birthing the first one.
Oh, absolutely. Oftentimes, authors believe that the books they want to write are of a certain nature. And they show up at one of my retreats, and they end up writing something completely different. Because what they fail to realize, Richard, is that the first book is for the author more than it is for the reader. Mm-hmm. And so you have to go through the cathartic process of birthing yourself first through that first book before the books that you really want to write come afterwards.
Mm. Now, you say you've been doing this for over 30 years, 32 years,
yeah.
And obviously you're enjoying it immensely. You've helped a lot of people to unlock those stories, shall we put it in that context, or messages that they've been desperately trying to release. I was watching a program yesterday, one of the science fiction programs, and this young man was writing a book. And, of course, he was using the equivalent of our tablets today, And this woman comes along, and she's got her own agenda, but nonetheless, she comes along and she says, here. And he had never seen paper fountain pen before.
Yes.
Yeah. And she says, here, start writing this. And of course, she's giving him the guidance and going on and so forth. And suddenly he just starts writing, and he's writing in cursive or longhand, if you will, which I thought was really amazing that someone in the 24th century still had that. But that was kind of cool. And the words just started flowing. And there were some other issues going on, too. But nonetheless, Do you find that it is more effective to write, hand write with pen or pencil, doesn't matter, rather than typing on a keyboard or even verbalizing, you know, dictating?
Yes. Yes. I find that it's essential to establish a tactile connection with the book through handwriting. So at our retreats, in my retreats, we start off writing the books in longhand for about 3 or 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Then I strongly suggest that people switch to the keyboard because they can maintain that depth very easily by maintaining a certain speed. And it's easier to maintain that speed on the keyboard. I am not an advocate of voice activation or dictation.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great concept. The problem is it moves a little too slow. And the slower an author moves beyond a certain speed, below a certain speed, the more cerebral intervention there is, and the more cerebral intervention there is, the spirituality, and then they end up writing, working on a book for 14 or 15, 16, 20 years. That never comes to fruition. So, see, the book, if your listeners could buy into this theory just even for a few moments, if your book it was written on the other side of life, probably before you were born, it's still in spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't have a body, and it can move very quickly. And the slowest that it can slow down to, once released, on a human level, is 1,500 words an hour to maintain its sanctity. So it's very important that an author achieve a writing speed of at least 1,500 words per hour to create a direct download of that book without sanctioning it through their left brains. Because 98% of the mistakes an author can make as a writer come directly as a result of inappropriate left brain intervention. So if the book is already written, we don't have to create it. That's a very important point. We do not have to create it. You don't have to be a creative individual to create a book. That's been created on the other side of life already. So you need to release it.
Hmm.
You need to release that book. Does that make sense, Richard?
It makes
sense. You're releasing a book that's already written. And again, I do want to stress the fact that I've worked with over 80,000 authors in the last 32 years. I've directly led tens of thousands to write their books under my tutelage. And I've never taught anyone how to write a book. I taught them how to connect with the book that was already there.
How does this relate, because I'm feeling that there is a connection here, to the massive library known as the Akashic Records?
Yes.
How does writing from God or connecting with the higher self to write that book that is already there and you're in the process of releasing it, are these works, if you will, books, writings that are there in those records, and it's now time for them to be released through this individual? Can you explain any of that?
I appreciate your knowledge on that, Richard. It's great to be able to talk to someone who's got such an in-depth understanding of spiritual nature. My belief is that you are connecting directly to the Akashic Records, and you made a deal with the Akashic Records to, at a certain time and place, to release your book into life. The Akashic Records are nothing more, though, than the library of life as lived by all individuals all at once. And I do believe that's where books come from. Yes, that's true.
Hmm. We're talking with Tom Bird. His website, tombird.com, T-O-M-B-I-R-D. And we're talking about Write from God. That's R-I-G-H-T, although you'll be doing some W-R-I-T-E-ing. The ultimate spiritual experience, writing your books in a weekend. And now, we're not talking here about writing, maybe we should define that. Are we talking about writing predominantly higher self, spiritual, metaphysical types of works, or are we talking about science fiction and maybe War and Peace or the great American novel? I mean, where's the genre? Which of them are we talking about here?
All of the above.
Okay.
All of the above. You know, anything from children's books to War and Peace to shorter novels to nonfiction books to textbooks. The key is that when a book is released, if it has the heart of God, as I like to call it, in it, that heart of God can take several different formations. It can be a humorous book. It can be a sad book. It can be a serious book. It can be a controversial book. But it has to have that heart of God for us to recognize that heart of God through our own readings and thus be able to digest it and want to digest the book. So it doesn't matter what form it takes, as much as what matters is that it originates from the same place that all great works have come from.
How many books have you written?
29.
Oh, almost one for every year you've been guiding people through this process.
Yes, and that's true.
And I'm curious as to the process. You talk about these retreats and writing. You're certainly not going to, most likely, if it's 1,500 words per, you said, per day, to keep it integral, you're not going to be writing War and Peace or a volume of that magnitude in a weekend. By the same token, the process of connecting with that higher self, is this done through meditation or toning? What is the initial impetus or catalyst?
Well, the average writing speed in an author at one of my retreats is 2,500 words per hour. So the average length of an American adult book by a first-time author is 35,000 words. So it takes them about 14 to 15 hours to write their books. How we achieve that speed is that we return to an innate situation in our life, innate place in our life. Writing is an innate art form. It's a spiritual art form. And the first thing we do, Richard, is we put people through a clearing and preparation stage for the retreat, which they do at home on their own, where they clear all of their inappropriate thinking and training that has led them to approach writing from a slow and cumbersome and somewhat unsuccessful approach. It's the first thing we do. Second thing we do, we familiarize them with the techniques that we utilize to meditate and get into the proper state of writing. Now, meditation in reality is nothing more than being in a listening state, clearing out the substance of one's mind so you can hear the heart of God as it comes through you in the form of a book. So we start our retreats on a Thursday night. I go Thursday night, all day Friday, all day Saturday, half day on Sunday. On Thursday night, we help people gain connection with their books for about 3 hours, and they write for 3 hours in longhand. Come Friday, they write for an hour in longhand and write for 7 hours on a keyboard or in longhand if they choose. What we want to make sure that they maintain is a certain speed of writing, so that way we can guarantee they're connecting directly with the spiritual essence of their books. We have, the last retreat we taught was in Santa Fe. Half the people finished their books by the end of Friday. Everyone finished their books by 4 o'clock on Saturday. So the average length of the book at a retreat that's produced at a retreat is about 30,000 words. We take people through revision. Revision increases the length of a book about 30%. So the average length of a book produced finally from a retreat at the end of revision is between 35 and 42,000 words. And War and Peace wouldn't sell in today's market. Neither would Moby Dick. People want things quicker, faster, more directly, and they'd rather read five shorter books than one really long book. So just in the last 2 years, we've had close to 40 books come out of the retreats that became number one Amazon bestsellers. So our authors are tapping into books that are meant to be released in today's time, and they're of all different types of books, all different types of books.
Mm. Now, with that in mind, and dealing with the real world, the literary world, the book world, if you will, if Moby Dick and War and Peace wouldn't sell today because people want it quicker and faster, then would it not make sense to write a book if it were, say, of a Melville type turn it into a series of books, mini series, if you will, similar to what maybe they've done with Harry Potter, because there were several books there, and so on and so forth. Is that the style that one, if you're going to write a big long story, if you will, and rather than cutting parts out, you cut it up into two or three or maybe four different books?
Well, the book already knows what it needs to do to reach the audience that it wants to reach.
Okay.
The author just needs to go with the book. So, you know, I'm sure when Melville wrote Moby Dick, which is one of my favorite books, he was in the correct state to download a huge book. But back then, that was before the advent of radio and cable and satellite TV and the internet. People would sit down and read 147 pages about the skeletal structure of a whale because they had nothing else to do. They won't do that today.
Mm.
And so what the author needs to do, really, it's very simple, Richard. What the author needs to do is show up, sit down, shut up, and write. And that's the key. The book will take care of the rest. And the book is like a literary child, Richard. It has its own divine purpose, its own divine intention, its own divine mission and voice. And my daughter is 10 years old, and I seek to be a great parent. So what I do is I listen. I listen to her. I listen to what her soul's saying through her, and I try to help her facilitate that in her lifestyle. And she's a great kid. But I know that there are certain things that she needs to do and certain things that she hears that I don't hear, but I listen to her. Because in listening to her, I can help provide her with a life that she deserves. And that's what an author's job is, to listen, to listen. Get the ego out of the way. Realize that you are, as the author, you are a very important part of the process, but you are only part of a team, a very important part of a team. You are not the book, and the book is not you. The book is an entity unto itself, and the book will know what to do. And the key is just listening to it.
I want to address the ego for a second in the context of number one bestseller. I mean, I can go to pretty much any literary website and I can find dozens of number one bestsellers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, well, okay, if all of these books are number one bestsellers, what does it mean to be a number one bestseller? What's the criterion? And is that something that we should even be thinking about when we're writing our books?
Well, you know, we live in an instant gratification age. And so the ego does need to be set aside for the brain to become a necessary part of the process. What do you have to do to become a number one bestseller? You have to write a damn good book. And what does that equate to, though, is the question. I think that's the next question. What does that equate to? It has to be a heartfelt book. You see, today's readers buy the messenger before they buy the message. They buy your voice. They buy your perspective. They buy your life. They buy your depiction of it. They buy your heart. More than anything else, they want to be inspired to feel something. And if you're not willing to share something that in a feeling nature, they're not willing to read it. So they don't buy information. They buy feeling. So when they read a book, they want to feel something, because when they feel something, they remember that they're alive. And so many of us get so busy, we forget how important our lives really are. So our job as authors is to write material of a feeling nature. And that's what comprises a damn good book. The reader will only buy a certain amount of valuable information if it's presented in a manner that approaches them personally. And that's what makes a bestseller, a book that makes people feel something. If you look at the New York Times bestseller list on any day, you'll find that there are many books on there that are so-called poorly written because they're not of a literary nature. But still, they become bestsellers because they're able to touch readers in a way that the readers are dying to be touched. And that's what readers buy from us. They buy secondary catalytic emotion.
How important, and of course this is, once the book has been written, submitted for publication, and they plan to publish it, and in today's era, in our day and time, the books are not being printed, certainly in the volumes. They're still being printed, but not nearly as many, because now the books are digitized. So how important is presentation, i.e., the cover, front and back, when it comes to that? And should that even be of a consideration to an individual when they're contemplating their book? Are they getting too far ahead of themselves?
No, it should be contemplated, and it's very important. Very, very important. Presentation is extremely important because that is the initial impression that a reader gets is like derived from the cover of a book. So that's very important. But the substance of the book needs to be the most important part. After you complete the substance of the book, pour your heart and soul into it, and then it's important to decorate it. Make sure it looks good. Make sure it's edited well. I mean, there's nothing that irritates an educated reader more than typographical or spelling errors. Make sure the editing is done properly. And the author should not do that, by the way. The author is not qualified to look at his or her own book and edit it. They should get an outside editor. And then the cover is very important. It's extremely important because that will cast the initial impression upon the reader. But the most important thing beyond all of that is the heart and soul the author is willing to release in sharing his or her message of whatever with the reader.
Hmm. Tom Bird's my guest. We're talking about Write From God, the title of his latest work, and having to do with your next work, if you will. You, words, writing, and your divine purpose here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. I want you to stay right where you are. We will be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, along with Tom Bird. He's the author of Write From God, where you will write the ultimate spiritual experience, writing your book in a weekend seminar. You basically will be able to be writing a book as a path to spiritual self-discovery. And I think, Tom, pretty much everything that we do, if we are open to it, is sort of on that path to spiritual self-discovery. And many people do have these incredible messages that they have gotten from, if you want to put it in this context, gotten from spirit. And they want to share it, but they want to make sure that it gets shared, because the last thing you'd like to see is you put this down, you put this down, you write it, and it doesn't go anywhere. And now what good is the message if nobody reads it, nobody connects with it?
Yes. Well, every book, it's been said by Mark Victor Hansen and others, it's not the words, the actual words that are left on a piece of paper that live forever and touch people forever. It's how the author felt when he or she wrote those words. So it's very important to first of all put one's heart and soul into a book and to realize that all great books, all best-selling books, got to where they are, through word of mouth. For every person that reads your book, Richard, when it's eventually released, and is positively affected by the experience, they will directly affect 5 other people on average to read your book within 2 weeks. So in regards to promotion, the most important thing is to write a book with heart and soul, the heart and soul of God coming through you. That's the most important thing, because that's what we're all looking for. While looking to find that heart and soul in books and other aspects of life, so we can find that heart and soul in us as well, too. That's the most important thing. Second most important thing is presentation. Have your books properly edited, revised by professionals. Not retired English teachers, not your best buddy living down the street, not your Uncle Al, but refined literary professionals. And the artwork of the book is very, very important. It has to look good. I mean, no one wants to walk into the house on the block that's in shambles. We all want to walk into the house that's beautifully adorned. And that's true with books, too. Very true with books. It's very important to realize, Richard, to be a successful author, that 6 versions of your book need to be created. 6 separate versions of your book need to be created to meet the needs of today's readership. One version is you have to create a hardback version, hard copy version, excuse me, of your book. Being a digital author is not enough. A hard copy version offers credibility, seriousness. You're taken seriously as an author once you have a hard copy version of your book, whether it's softback or hardback. And then you have to create 5 digital versions of your book to meet the needs of our ever-growing digital audience. You have to create a Kindle version, iPad version, Sony Book Reader version, PDF version, and a Barnes & Noble version, Nook. So to meet the needs of today's audience, part of presentation is creating 5 or 6 different versions of your book. That's very, very important. Now, in regards to promotion, social media, outside of formal media, which we're participating in right now, social media is the key to getting word out on your book. You want people to read it, and so if they read it, they like it, they spread the word for you, that's how things go viral in today's world. It's not enough to just write a book. It has to be published and published professionally. And I don't mean conventionally. You don't have to publish things conventionally to be published professionally. In fact, conventional marketplaces is quickly dying and is almost dead right now. You want to self-publish through a proven print-on-demand publisher that can guide you through all the necessary editorial advice and guidance that you need to become the author you already are.
I find it fascinating, the whole process from the concept in one's mind and heart, or connecting with that higher self, connecting with God, to put those words down on the paper and then transforming them so that others can read them. How is this different? I guess maybe I'll rephrase the question. In what way is this different from, say, a storyteller who learns to tell a story the same way? Because that's the key. You have to tell the story the same way every single time. And that's why training is so rigorous. But from your perspective as an author and as well as a teacher of writing and so forth, the difference between the verbal storyteller versus one who puts that story down, I want to say on paper or in print. I'm not sure what the terminology is today, but you understand where I'm coming from, creating a book.
Releasing a book is a very deliberate, spontaneous approach to expressing one's divine purpose. Spontaneous, divine, conscious approach. A storyteller may have to rehearse over and over again, like a actor rehearses lines for a play or a movie or a part. That's basically rote. When you write a book, it's spontaneous. It's spontaneous expression. It's not a practice. It's not something you learn. It's something you return to. You're returning to a divine, innate form of communication that is natural to you, but has been forgotten. What's it say in the Bible? First there was the Word, and the Word was of God, and the Word is God. Now, I believe that the divine can take several different forms. I know the divine has taken millions of different forms in my life. Sometimes it's come to me, the divine's come to me through lyrics I've heard on a radio. Sometimes part of a movie, sometimes humorously, sometimes through anger, sometimes through frustration, sometimes through sadness. The key is to where you go through a rigorous routine on memorizing a story in your presentation as a storyteller, a verbal storyteller. When writing, you need some specific regimen as well, too. But the regimen would be designed to turn you into the spontaneous expression of something brand new being released into the world not something repeated over and over again. Does that make sense, Richard?
I do understand it, yes.
Okay.
And I have always had a struggle in my own life with sitting down and reading books. What about the same, sort of the same kind of question, but versus the two, one being the book, the print, the text, versus an audio book, say the author were to read or have some other person read their book?
Okay. Okay, a book had already been written, I'm assuming.
Granted.
Okay, when we read, most of us don't read really fast. So it becomes a cerebral art form. And I, like you, have a difficult time reading books. I don't have a difficult time writing them because I write very fast and I connect with spirit when I do it. When I read a book, I sometimes read a lot slower than I write, and the result becomes cumbersome and sometimes boring because it becomes a left-brain intellectual drill as opposed to an exciting spiritual adventure.
Yeah, I can agree with you on that. I mean, mine goes back actually to school primarily, and difficulty in reading. I always hated being called to read up in front of the class, you know.
Yeah.
But, and of course, I grew up using large print books, which were wonderful to have the opportunity to be able to do that. And then in my early days of broadcasting, worked for a radio reading service for the blind and visually impaired. Then when I moved to Santa Barbara, I found out that there was a reading center right here for the blind, and they had added a different word to it, the blind and dyslexic. And at first I'm going, what? Because they can still read. Well, I found out that that's not entirely true because of their immediate challenges. But nonetheless, that format, as far as that radio station, to me was always the ultimate because it allowed people the opportunity to have access to the printed word that they would not ordinarily have. And I realize this is a whole different area than what we're talking about, but I think it still applies that... I got into a bit of a heated discussion with the general manager of the Christian station that I was working at. And at that time in Congress, they were debating whether or not to continue funding Hugh Hefner's Playboy in Braille.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, look, you don't want your dollars, your tax dollars going to pay for that. But first of all, they don't print the pictures because it's Braille.
Right.
And from a strictly business standpoint, if Hefner wanted to do this at the regular subscription price, hey, he could do it. Not a problem. But from the standpoint of freedom of access to information, you are now telling the blind and visually impaired what they can and cannot read. How would you like if I told you when you go into a bookstore, no, you can't go down that aisle. You can't read any of those books because I said so. It doesn't matter the reason. It's just that's because I said so. Whereas I can go into a bookstore and I can pull any book out and look at the spine or look at the cover. And that was kind of why I was asking you about, you know, the presentation, which I do agree with you that presentation is everything. That there are times when I'll pull a book out of the bookshelf, whether it's at the library or at a bookstore, and I'll flip through it if I like the cover, which, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. But that can draw people into it rather than, you know, push them away.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, if a book is divinely led and it's published properly and presented professionally, there's no way that it can keep from being the success it deserves to be. But the presentation determines how long the success is going to take to manifest. So if you have a less than creative cover or an appropriate cover, or you've done a sloppy job on formatting your book, it's going to take people a lot longer to find the brilliance in that book than it would if it was attractively adorned with a beautiful cover and professionally edited. And a good case in point would be Conversations with God.
Mm.
Conversations with God. When that was written, it was initially presented in a typed format and Xerox copied.
Wow.
The message was so strong, though, that eventually was picked up by a publisher because the publisher was so enamored with the words and the power behind the words that he initially overlooked the presentation.
Hmm. Well, and that goes to, again, that power, the power of the word. And that's another subject we've had conversations about on this program is the power of words. Growing up in this industry, first in a Christian radio station, I kept hearing all the time about how powerful the word, as you quoted from First Genesis, how powerful words are, or the word is. And then I started hearing people uttering things that were, potentially, slanderous, or libelous.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then I remember going through one political cycle, presidential cycle, and I was listening to the campaign speeches based upon, again, the whole aspect of power of words. And I thought, wait a minute, you're saying these things and then you go on to win the primary. And now you want all the people you blasted, all the people you spoke ill of to join your fight to beat the other guys on the other side of the aisle. Then when it's all over and one of you has won the top spot, now you want everybody to join hands and sing Kumbaya. But those words that you spoke, and we've heard some pretty vile ones here in the 2015-2016 cycle already for president, those words have power. Those words have energy. Just as the words that are written in a book, your book or anybody else's, they have power and energy. And they don't just go away.
That's absolutely true. And that's one of the reasons internally and subconsciously the writing of a book can be so intimidating to a new author, because subconsciously they realize that a book becomes a permanent, tangible, and energetic record of what they believe, feel, or want to say. So the words never leave, and power and energy beyond the words that were written never leave as well, too. And I really feel, Richard, this the divine rite of passage for every human being, that every human being needs to go through the writing of a book. And I'm not the only one that believes that. Aristotle said to live a full and complete life. Every human being needs to write a book. And some of our more enlightened families, like the Kennedys, they have a ritual when, before their children graduate from college, they have to write a book. And through the writing of that book, they oftentimes find their life purpose, and thus they're able to become the good public servants they go on to become. So this is something I feel everyone needs to do. And I hate to use that word needs to, what's it needs to, but my experience has taught me that the change and evolution of a human being is so great when he or she writes a book using this method that I was blessed to understand at an early age, that there's nothing that can replace that. And to not write a book means you're losing so much of your life vibrance, so much enlightenment, and cast you to struggle for the rest of your life to try to find that purpose when the book will bring it directly to you to be expressed. I don't know, I hate to venture, what my life would be like if I was still alive had I not gone on to write books, because it's meant so much for me, and it's meant so much for the people around me. And it's really, if there's any good in me, it's come as a direct result of the direct connection I've received through the writing of my books, through my chosen profession. And I encourage everyone out there that if you feel you have a book inside you, or if someone's telling you, you need to write a book, Richard. They're telling you that because you need to write a book, Richard.
Short and simple.
Yeah, because they understand at some level, whoever's telling you that understands that there is something that's missing in your life that'll be filled by the writing of that book that's trying to come through you. So I encourage everyone out there to take the leap and write a book. It's not hard. It's not impossible. You don't have to be bright or enlightened or educated or of a certain age or a certain gender to be able to write one. Write one. If you can't write it for yourself, use the methods I describe on my website, tombird.com, to write that book for those around you. Because until you write that book that you're meant to write, you're not the human being that you're meant to be. Mm. And so I know that I would say half the people that come to my retreats have to use the codependent excuse of writing a book for someone else in their life because they can't do it for themselves. But it doesn't matter who you do it for. It just matters that you get it done. And it can be the most thrilling, enlightening, adventurous, short experience of your life. And again, the retreat I teach is called Write Your Best Soul in a Weekend. And it's a little bit of a leading title because we don't really write a book in a weekend. We write it in about a day and a half to 2 days. It doesn't even take the entire weekend to write it. Once you connect with the power of God and let that power come through you, anything is possible. Has been shown through the years. Anything is possible, including the writing of a book in a weekend. And it leaves a permanent effect on your life, the lives around you, and on your soul. It has a permanent effect on your soul to write a book quickly, fastly, efficiently, but most of all to write a book. So, Richard, I encourage you, and I again invite you to come as my guest to my retreat in Sedona in March and finish that book that you've been working on since 2001.
Well, I'm going to do what I can to make arrangements to do that. That would be, number one, a great opportunity, as well as a lot of fun, too, to travel back to that part of my growing up, especially in my in my spiritual life. I would spend some time up there on occasion and just, you know, go over to Bell Rock or some of the other places along the highway there. To me, it's an incredible place, Sedona is. They call it one of the vortices, if you will, of energy. Even if you just aren't into the vortexes and so forth, and the Red Rock is just astounding. I mean, it's like, wow. Some have even said it's, you know, something really rusted out around here. Well, it's not entirely wrong assumption there. Very interesting, and yes, I'll keep in touch with you and let you know what we can do. But in the meantime, I want to find out a little bit more about, before we have to wrap up our program, about you and I mean, you've spoken quite eloquently up to this point about this whole process and the need for us to write and get these messages out. And again, they're not necessarily, if I'm understanding correctly, they're not necessarily our messages per se, as much as if you're tapped in, as you've talked about.
Yeah.
They're messages that need to be brought forth.
Yes, it's really unfair. Authors get all the credit, but they don't do much of the work. I can honestly say that I'm paid extremely handsomely. I have a great life, and I'm given a lot of credit that I don't deserve because the messages that come through me are of a divine nature. But the divine doesn't really care about the things that I care about as a human being, so he, she, or it lets me keep all the money and fame that I want. But it's, you know, we start off the show where you talk about the future of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of things that could happen. But we could go one way or the other, I think. And I really feel that if we're able to raise the vibrational level of the planet to the next level of where this Earth is going, everything will be fine. If we don't, everything will be the opposite of fine. And books are a way to do that. Not only the reading of them, but more than that, release the divine messages through the writing of them. And so I believe we have a very rosy future if a lot of people write books. I'm not so sure if we got a really great one if people don't.
So if you want to help bring about a better world, write that book.
I'm trying to tell you, if nothing else, it directly affects the author's world and benefits their world and everyone in it immensely.
Hmm. Well, I'm just taken aback by the opportunities that are out there. I mean, I've heard from others who are authors and who are asked the question of budding authors, what's the one thing that they should do? And the same advice from almost all of them is always write. That's all you need to do is write. Don't think about it. Don't ponder it. Don't talk about it with your friends. Speaking of which, when you do write, and yes, I understand about the manuscript going to someone else for editing and proofing and so forth, but shouldn't you wait until you've finished it, at least as far as you're able to discern that, okay, yeah, I've da-da-da-da, the end, and now I can give this to an editor and so forth. Should you really be talking about it with other people at that point?
Yes and no.
Uh-oh.
You want the people in your life to know that you're writing a book because you need time to get away from them, or you need time to justify time away from them. So, yes, you want to let them know that you're writing a book. Number two, though, I wouldn't recommend sharing that book with anyone else until it's been published, professionally published, because we're all very impressionistic, and a wife or a child or a friend or a colleague or a critic may innocently have an adverse effect on our own vision of the beauty of our book. So I believe in sharing my books with everybody as long as they're published first. That way I can't go back and change them based upon the adverse reaction of a colleague, friend, family member, or spouse.
I want to thank you so much for taking so much time to share with us these ideas. And certainly there's so much more that we could talk about and more that people can find out about if they go to your website, tombird.com, T-O-M-B-I-R-D.com, and find out about the seminars or the workshops, if you will, and get started on that book that you're writing. And I hope that maybe one day, if you make it out here to Santa Barbara, that we might be able to continue this conversation in studio.
I would love that, Richard.
Yeah.
You make the invitation, I'll be there. I'll be there in the area next January and probably next October, lecturing at a variety of different locales.
January 2016.
Yes.
Yeah, would love to do that. Before I let you go, though, I have three other questions, three final questions. Again, thank you so much for all the time that you've given to us.
Sure.
First of all, who is Tom Bird?
Tom Bird is a human being trying to live a divine life.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
What I'd ultimately like to achieve is that a new default system for the writing of a book is created that encourages everyone that wants to write a book for whatever reason to not take the step to write that book.
And what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is best defined by everything I've written. You know, it's been said that every author writes the same book over and over and over again, just in different ways. The message that's conveyed in my books, and I believe in my life, is that we all have a divine purpose. If we live that purpose, we'll be happy. If we don't live that purpose, we won't be. So the only way to be happy is to take the step to live your divine purpose. That's my message.
And one of the other things that occurred to me as we wrap up this program is this aspect that I used to talk about a lot on other programs that I hosted back in the 80s and 90s, having to do with leaving a legacy. And in the context of our conversation, if one was to, and I'll just put it in this context, if one was to write their book during one of your workshops, where they've tapped in, they've cleared away all of the stuff that gets in the way, and they write that book that is going to be so charged, each word and each page, with that energy that doesn't dissipate. It doesn't matter how many copies are made or you know, how many files are transmitted across the internet, if you will. The energy is still there. What a legacy to leave for future generations to help them along as well.
Absolutely. And I really feel, Richard, that no human being's life is complete without writing the book that they're meant to write before they leave.
Well, I thank you for writing the 29, and I'm sure there are probably, who knows, 29 more somewhere out there for you to write.
At least.
At least.
At least.
And I want to thank you again for joining us on the program, and I look forward to meeting you in person someday very soon, maybe here in Santa Barbara in January.
I hope so. Thank you, Richard.
You are welcome. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.